googlemotherfuckers.podbean.com.
It's Google, motherfuckers.
Welcome to the Call to Bean, you cop-sucking motherfucking dog shit ass cunt bitch.
Coleridge made a very handy observation some years ago. He said, always start with the other man's ignorance. You can quickly then acquire his knowledge. Now, for example, this matter of the invisible environment, that every technology creates a new environment that is invisible to the users thereof. Once you can speak and use signs that are not representational of anything present, but of things long past or things far away, then you have command over time and space.
I believe that magic is art, and that art, whether that be writing, music, sculpture, or any other form, is literally magic.
So the extensions of man, in this sense, create environments of many, many dimensions, all of which tend to be concealed from us.
A grimoire, for example, the Book of Spells, is simply a fancy way of saying grammar. Indeed, to cast a spell is simply to spell, to manipulate words, to change people's consciousness. And I believe that this is why an artist or writer is the closest thing in the contemporary world that you are likely to see to a shaman.
Speech as communication gives you a huge time, space, power. We call it tradition.
I believe that all culture must have arisen from cult. Originally, all of the facets of our culture, whether they be in the arts or the sciences, were the province of the shaman.
If we say that a religion is a combination of creed, code, and cult, the creed is the revelation, a revealed symbolism of what the universe is about, and you are commanded to believe in it on the divine authority. The code is the revealed will of God for man, which you are commanded to obey, and the cult is the divinely revealed form of worship, which you must practice. Commandment, because God is boss, he's ruler, king of kings and lord of lords.
In latter times, I think that artists and writers have allowed themselves to be sold down the river. They have accepted the prevailing belief that art and writing are merely forms of entertainment. They're not seen as transformative forces that can change a human being, that can change a society.
In the electric age, however, we have access to all pasts and all times and all speeches, all languages at such speed that the pattern of them becomes very plain and simple.
See, this is the current movement in philosophy. Logical analysis says you mustn't think about existence. It's a meaningless concept. Therefore, philosophy has become the discussion of trivia. And philosophical journals is now as satisfactorily dull as any other kind of purely technical inquiry. No good philosopher lies awake nights worrying about the destiny of man and the nature of God and all that sort of thing, because a philosopher today is a practical fellow who comes to the university with a briefcase at 9 and leaves at 5. He does philosophy during the day, which is discussing whether certain sentences have meaning, and if so, what. And then he would, as William Earle said in a very funny essay, he would come to work in a white coat if he thought he could get away with it.
The fact that in present times this magical power has degenerated to the level of cheap entertainment and manipulation is, I think, a tragedy. At the moment, the people who are using shamanism and magic to shape our culture are advertisers, rather than trying to wake people up. Their shamanism is used as an opiate to tranquilize people, to make people more manipulable. Their magic box of television, and by their magic words, their jingles, can cause everybody in the country to be thinking the same words and have the same banal thoughts all at exactly the same time.
Guys, you ready for your next comic? Guys, keep it going nice and loud. This guy's a favorite guy of mine. Give it up for Ian Ellis. I feel like you were mean to that last comedian, audience. You don't give awkward silence to a guy wearing a shooter vest. He might come back and not to tell jokes. You're fucking nicer to him. There's like politics going on. That shit's a bother. My thing is like, I don't have time, okay? Like some people are like, hey, you should get into football. Go fuck yourself. There's teams and players and stat. It's a homework assignment. I'm too old to get into this shit. Like you either grow up into it or you don't. And I missed out on football because nobody explained it to me as a child. And now politics is going on, and it's only two teams, but there's a lot of fucking players in this shit. I don't have time to learn their fucking dumb names. I didn't know what the vice president looked like until the inaugural address. Like, holy shit, that's a white dude. The whitest white dude I've ever seen. Did they get him? They got him off of Mad Men? There's all this shit going on, and it matters, and I feel like I can't be informed. Like, you gotta learn their names, and then the shit they voted for, and what that shit means, and what sneaky shit is hidden inside. Who has the time to know what this shit is about? And what's frustrating is, like, I try not to pay attention, and I'm still like, it's like a fucking nest of spiders. Where it's like, sometimes I feel like, oh good, we got rid of someone, and then they just pop back up like herpes. And like, I thought we got rid of you. Nope. Like, Mitt Romney, I thought we were done with him. He's in charge of some shit now. Rick Perry, one of the things he couldn't remember, he's in charge of that shit. I thought we got rid of that fucking vampire, but he just went back to his little shadow, and now he's back. It's a hard time, and I'm my politics are like to the left of nihilism. I don't give a fuck. That shit don't affect me, do you, boo-boo? But it's like the left is getting real dirty, like they've lost their way, like they're doing the same shit. I'm like, what happened to integrity? And like people start calling people out on language, and I'm just like, who the fuck made you sheriff? Like, you're not into the term tranny? Wasn't your last post about spaghetti? Now you're a fucking moral authority? You're Mahatma fucking Gandhi? Wacky shit about food yesterday. And I gotta listen to your fuck. And it's like millennials. How does a generation with no social skills tell people how they should speak? Learn how to have a conversation, you cunty little fuck. Like, language is one of those things, you're just not going to get it right. Right. God didn't get it right. If he did, there wouldn't be contradictions in the Bible. Nobody calls him out on that shit. What I don't like about the left is now they're using sneaky tactics. I'm like, you can't co-opt evil. That's not what good guys do. Nobody ever slaveried a good cause. There was no Holocaust to peace on earth. Hitler tried it, but everybody said that shit was evil. It's hard because I have honest questions. Like, at what age do Asians learn how to be quiet? Because old Asians are fucking ninjas, but their kids are tyrants. I wish they'd shut the fuck up. Asians learn how to hit your kids, because they cry too goddamn much. I don't like it because I'm a comic, so it's like shit you can and can't talk about. But it's that cognitive dissonance between like right words and right actions. Like, you can say some stupid shit, that doesn't mean you support it. I'm going to close out on this joke, alright? You guys down for some really dark shit?
Yeah.
Remember, you clap for that. It was a guy that raped and murdered an infant. Okay. It's terrible. I don't support that. But it's really funny to examine the fact that he's also a stupid criminal. Right. He raped and then murdered a child. I don't know much about kids, but I assume a dead kid's a lot quieter than a being raped kid.
Oh, damn.
And then he got caught with the body. It's 6 weeks old. How do you not... You could sweep it under the rug. They... He raped it first. Like, they make child-sized pans for the oven. If you can smoke a brisket, you can smoke a child to delicious warmth. The hard part is the accusations. Cause kids are like, did that child have an erection? You know, you hate to think that maybe it was a slutty baby that was asking for it. My name's Ian Ellis. I love you. Good night.
Ian Ellis, one more time.
Oh. They're leaving after that one. Way to go, Ian.
And they say, if we can control these personalities, if we can pick the personalities that people will respond to, or we can cultivate these personalities, then we can stay in control of the machine. It went from them being able to successfully do that to the machinery saying, we don't even have to cultivate personalities. We can cultivate personas. So it went from culture to the cult of personality to the cult of persona. It's gone from being, this is my art that reflects my history, my personal life, my struggles, my ambitions, my dreams, to this is my persona as it is attached to a product or a lifestyle or something that you can buy.
Two intertwined, many of them.
If there's no voice of dissent, if there's no imagination, earnestness, if there's no truth in what artists, the talented people do, if it's all about the gesture, it's telling people there's no room for your imagination. There's no use being imaginative. Follow the rules. If you see people as supposed to be imaginative people, creative people, not being that, I think that the long-term effect is that the masses in general just find themselves being less creative, less imaginative, and creativity and imagination are integral in creating change. When they submit themselves to certain forms of machinery, like television or radio, then it's a perfect opportunity for you to be suppressed. The format is predetermined, and it's pretty predictable. Everybody makes it like it's not that premeditated, you're being conspiracy theorist. And it's like, if it's not that premeditated, why is it so predictable? If it's not premeditated, how come it's so reliably uniform? Now the people who create culture have been bribed and co-opted, sometimes consciously and even worse, unconsciously, by these huge corporations to say the only way that we'll take your message to the mass is if you represent what we are comfortable with, seeing your community or seeing your demographic, which is a really kind of sterile terminology for people and a community. It's like, well, your demographic, we're comfortable with you representing this to them. We like it when we're comfortable with that image. You know, you get guys like Dylan or Bob Marley, but those weren't that wasn't the aim. The aim was to make their most honest work. And because they did it, it just gets airborne, and it's something else. That's the thing about information, is that it's really, the truth is a form of magic, and it finds its way to people. Without a machine, without approval from the gatekeeper, how did that happen? It's just it.
Oh no, you're fake news and we're real news. No, we're fake news and you're real news.
To dominate this, one of the ways to do it is to, as you were talking about before, the buttons present themselves. They're almost self-pushing buttons. So we have to push the buttons on him personally, make this as unpleasant personally for him, since that is what decides everything he does. So every time you see a tweet, subtweet him, swear words, send it right back at him. And if he doesn't see it, somebody who supports him will ruin their day. It's a psychological war. And the other part of it is to keep saying...
Here's just what I wanted to tell you guys.
Yeah.
Stop. Stop hurting America.
Okay, now...
Let me come work for us, because we, as the people...
How do you pay?
The people, not well.
Better than CNN, I'm sure.
But you can sleep at night. See, the thing is, we need your help. Right now, you're helping the politicians and the corporations, and we're left out there to mow our lawns.
You just said we're too rough on them when they make mistakes.
No, you're not too rough on them. You're part of their strategies. You're partisan, hacks.
You love to take shots at Fox News.
Yes, I do.
Over the years, you have called us a biased organization, mm-hmm. relentlessly promoting an ideological agenda under the rubric of being a news organization. A relentless, agenda-driven, 24-hour news opinion propaganda delivery system.
I realized early that the proper use of propaganda is a true art and one that remained practically unknown to the privileged class parties.
What do you think is power? Whips? Guns? Money? You can't turn men into slaves unless you break their spirit, kill their capacity to think and act on their own, tie them together, teach them to conform, to unite, to agree, to obey. That makes one neck ready for one leash.
Propaganda in the war was a means to an end. The cruelest weapons were humane, if they brought quicker victory. And the only showy morality to be used was that which helped assure the dignity of freedom for the nation.
What is wrong with this country is not that we face problems that we have not faced before. We face a deficiency in our problem-solving mechanism. And the reason we face a difficulty in our problem-solving mechanism is that a good portion of this country has created an alternate universe.
Where should propaganda be directed? At the educated intellectuals or at the less educated masses? It must be aimed continuously at the masses alone.
I would love to do an interview where it's just sort of deconstructed the talking points of Iraq, sort of the idea of, is this really the conversation we're having about this war, that if we don't defeat Al-Qaeda in Iraq, they'll follow us home, that to support the troops means not to question that the surge could work, that what we're really seeing in Iraq is not a terrible war, but in fact, just the media's portrayal of it. So I wanted to just go through, like, is this really the conversation that we're going to be having about something as significant as this war?
They say that asking for a timetable or criticizing the president is not supporting the troops. Explain to me why that is supporting the troops less than extending their tours of duty from 12 months to 15 months, putting them in stop loss, and not having Walter Reed be up to snuff. How is it, how can the president justify that? How can he have the balls to justify that?
All I can say is that if you talk to these young men and women who are fighting, they'll tell you they think it's a worthwhile cause and that they're fighting for freedom.
The point of public relations slogans like support our troops is that they don't mean anything. They mean as much as whether you support the people in Iowa. Of course, there was an issue. The issue was, do you support our policy? But you don't want people to think about the issue. That's the whole point of good propaganda. You want to create a slogan that nobody's going to be against, and I suppose everybody will be for, because nobody knows what it means, because it doesn't mean anything. But its crucial value is it diverts your attention from a question that does mean something. Do you support our policy? And that's the one you're not allowed to talk about.
And all I'm saying, the overwhelming majority of them do. I hear from them all the time.
The majority of guys that I talk to say, the political scene is not my scene, I'm a soldier.
I talk to them all the time, my friend, and I hear from them all the time. They know. I know what war is like. I know what
you're saying to me,
and I'm telling you that they believe that they are fighting for somebody else's freedom, and the majority of them believe that.
I don't
doubt that. You're entitled to your views,
but
the view of the majority of them is that they think they are doing the right thing, and their parents, who have also had had them sacrificed, generally speaking, are proud of the service of their sons and daughters.
No one's saying that they shouldn't be proud of their service.
And I'm proud of them too, because they're the best.
This is a very unfair way to deal with this issue. Because
it certainly is.
Let me explain it this way.
Very unfair.
What I'm saying is, what's less supportive of them
are being told they're fighting a war.
Settle down for a second.
You settle down. That they're fighting a war that they lost. That's not fair to them.
What I believe is less supportive to the good people who believe they're fighting a great cause is to not give them a strategy that makes their success possible.
We now have a strategy.
Adding 10,000 people to quell Baghdad, add 350,000 and you might have a shot.
I don't know that strategy will succeed, but we do have a new strategy. It's a fact.
All I'm saying is you cannot look a soldier in the eye and say questioning the president is less supportive to you than extending your tour 3 months. You should be coming home to your family.
Every American.
Saul McCain shriveled. I mean, he's been on your show.
He didn't believe me. I think anybody who's been in a POW camp for 5 years can take 8 minutes on The Daily Show. But
something happened. You saw it happen.
What you saw was evasive action. It wasn't shriveling. It was merely...
he dropped his head and you could actually see.
He stopped connecting and just looked at my chest and decided, I'm just going to continue to talk about honor and duty and the families should be proud and all the things that are cudgels emotionally to keep us from the conversation, but things that weren't relevant to what we were talking about.
It must appeal to the feelings of the public rather than to their reasoning ability.
The conception of democracy is the one that I mentioned. The bewildered herd are a problem. We've got to prevent their rage and trampling. We've got to distract them. They should be watching the Super Bowl or sitcoms or, you know, violent movies or something. Every once in a while you call on them to chant meaningless slogans like support our troops. You scare, they got to keep them pretty scared, because unless they're scared properly and frightened of all kind of devils that are going to destroy them from outside, you know, or inside or somewhere, they may start to think, which is very dangerous because they're not competent to think.
Propaganda's purpose is not scientific training of the individual, not to give details or to act as a course of instruction, but directing the masses' attention to particular facts, occurrences, and necessities. The art of propaganda consists in putting a matter so clearly and forcibly before the minds of the people that it creates a strong conviction in everyone. It is essential to success that propaganda reinforces the reality of the facts that are promoted, the necessity of what is being promoted, and the just or rightness of its character. All propaganda must appeal to the common people in tone and in form, and must keep its intellectual level to the capacity of the least intelligent person at whom it is directed. In other words, the intellectual level must be lowered as the mass of people it is intended to reach grows.
My problem is it's become tribal. And if you have 24-hour networks that focus, their job is to highlight the conflict between two sides, where I don't think that's the main conflict in our society. That was the point of the rally, was to deflate that idea that that's a real conflict, red and blue, Democrat, Republican. But I feel like there's a bigger difference between people with kids and people who don't have kids than red state, blue state.
The less science is involved and the more emotions are involved, the more complete the success will be. Understanding the emotional patterns of the great masses and using proper psychology to get their attention and touch their hearts is the true art of propaganda. The great masses' capacity to absorb information is very limited. They have very little understanding and they are very forgetful. For these reasons, any effective propaganda must be confined to very few points, and these must be expressed in simple stereotype formulas. They must be used repeatedly until the very last man cannot help but know their meaning instantly.
And when I say, you know, puppets making crank calls in front of me, I don't mean that to diminish comedy. I mean that that is not then reinforced through the next person. It's not a relay. And there is a amplifying effect to the relay.
What the people never understood was the first requirement for any propaganda activity, an intentionally biased and one-sided attitude toward every question discussed. It is the responsibility of propaganda to emphasize exclusively the one cause it represents, and not to evaluate others.
The intention is to say that we've all bought into that the conflict in this country is left and right. Liberal, conservative, red, blue. And all the news networks have bought into that. CNN sort of started it. They had this idea that, you know, the fight in Washington is Republicans and Democrats. So why don't we isolate that and we'll stand back here and that's, you know, Democrats and Republicans will go at it. Red and blue staters will go at it. And what it does is it amplifies a division that I actually don't think is the right fight. But if what you're asking me is, do I believe that? What he's saying, that's what I believe? No. But what I do believe is both sides have their way of shutting down debate. And the news networks have allowed these two sides to become the fight in the country. And I think the fight in the country is corruption versus not corruption.
It must not objectively explore any truth that favors the other side or fairly weigh the options and then present the masses with a strict doctrine.
In political discourse, every term has two meanings. You got to start by recognizing that. So democracy has an official meaning, which is something like, you know, the ability of the public to take part in running their own affairs or something. But it also has a technical meaning, the one that's actually used. Something is a democracy if it's run by the business classes. If business runs it, especially business elements that are supportive of U.S. interests, then it's a democracy. If not, it's not a democracy. It doesn't matter. Nothing else matters, virtually. You'll check, you'll notice that this criterion works quite perfectly for identifying democracy. Same is true of the term peace process. It has a dictionary meaning. In the dictionary meaning, a peace process is some kind of process that's trying to lead towards peace. But it also has a technical meaning. In its technical meaning, it refers to whatever the United States happens to be advocating at a particular moment. Whatever diplomatic initiatives the United States is advocating, that's the peace process. Notice it follows that it's a logical impossibility for the United States to be opposed to the peace process. That's a nice consequence. To prove that the United States is for peace, you don't have to do any laborious inquiry into the annoying facts, because it's true by definition. Since the peace process is whatever the United States is up to, the United States is always supporting peace. And the U.S. enemies are always opposed to peace, because they're not supporting what the U.S. is up to, and by definition that means they're opposed to peace. You'll never find in the U.S. media, or for that matter in U.S. scholarship for the most part, any such phrase as the United States is opposing the peace process, or the United States is trying to block the peace process. You can't find such statements because they'd be logical contradictions.
It must not argue matters based on theoretical rules of justice. Propaganda must constantly endeavor to present only the aspect of truth that is favorable to its own side.
I think the brilliance of Fox is they've delegitimized the idea of editorial authority while exercising incredible editorial authority,
right.
Which is, it's amazing. And they also have the game that they're all out to get us. So any criticism of them can be filtered through the idea that it's persecution. It's not, this isn't criticism, it's persecution.
The great masses of people are not made up of diplomats, professors of law, or even people capable of making a judgment based on reason and logic. They are human beings, indecisive and subject to doubt and uncertainty. The moment our propaganda admits even the faintest glimmer of justice is due to the other side, seeds of doubt have been planted, and they will begin to question whether our own side is just. The masses cannot tell where the enemy's wrongs end and their own begin. In these cases, they become uncertain and suspicious.
Everybody picks people to give themselves cover. You always like, the most valuable person in the world is a turncoat.
They never allowed two-sided arguments which might have raised doubts. They realized the broad masses' emotional state was primitive. They proved this by publishing horror story propaganda that met the masses on their level. They ruthlessly and brilliantly reinforced their moral position, which strengthened endurance at the front despite great defeats. Propaganda must limit itself to saying a very little, but saying it a lot.
The problem with 24-hour news cycle is it's built for a very particular thing, 9/11. Other than that,
there really isn't 24 hours of stuff to talk about.
Right.
In the same way. Now, the problem is, how do you keep people watching it? OJ's not going to kill someone every day. So that's gone. So what do you have to do? You have to elevate the passion of everything else that happens that might even be somewhat mundane and elevate it to the extent that this is breaking news. This is developing news. This is breaking developing news. The aggregate effect of that is that you begin to lose the lexicon. You begin to lose any meaning of what breaking news means, or urgent, or look at this, or dangerous. That was our montage at the end.
The purpose of propaganda is not to be a constant source of interesting diversion for unconcerned, smart gentlemen, but to convince the masses.
When you have people on for just knee-jerk, reactionary talk.
You know what's always great, a great exercise? Look at the difference between the top story on cable news and the top story in the newspapers.
But the bias of the mainstream media is towards sensationalism, conflict, and laziness.
Well, I think what degraded the institutions are probably financial culpability, are probably decision-making that occurred based on pure instinct of putting news into the entertainment facilities, so that you've created what degraded it is 24-hour news operations that are built for catastrophic events, but in the absence of those catastrophic events have to gin up urgency so that they can continue to get the kind of eyeballs. And the way that you gin up urgency is through conflict and sensationalism. So what degrades their credibility is their own business models.
The masses are slow moving, and it may take a long time before they are ready to even notice something. Only constant repetitions of the simplest ideas will finally stick in their minds. Any variations in the propaganda message must never change the purpose of the propaganda, but should always reinforce the same conclusion. The main slogan must be highlighted from various angles, stated in different ways, but every discussion must end with the conclusion itself. Only then can and will propaganda produce a unified and concentrated effect. The success of any advertising, whether in business or politics, depends on perseverance and consistency. The enemy war propaganda was a perfect model because it was restricted to a few points, targeted exclusively at the masses, and continued with tireless perseverance.
We look at the absurdity of this system provides us the most material, and that is best served by sort of the theater of it all.
When those basic ideas and methods of presentation were seen to be solid, they were used throughout the war without even the slightest change.
Do you like interviewing politicians?
No. I despise it. As most sentient creatures, I think, would. Imagine having to interview salespeople. They're salespeople. They live in a world of denial and conjuring. It's very strange. It's very strange to talk to people who have lost their awareness that that's what they're doing. At least with a salesperson, they'll every now and again go, look, I shouldn't be telling you this.
It's a piece of crap.
At first, the propaganda seemed idiotic in its use of disrespectful statements. Later, it became unpleasant. Then, it was finally believed.
There is a premise out there. The premise is we are all on this kind of axis of left-right. Maybe there's a different premise. And I don't mean that in the way of partisanship. I mean it in the way of they cover politics. Politics is a Democratic and Republican game. It is left and right. I think the conflict that would be more appropriate to divide a news channel to would be corruption, non-corruption.
Where these folks live, Bullshit Mountain. And on Bullshit Mountain, our problems are amplified and our solutions simplified. That's why they won't work. It's a question of putting our issues in context.
No. Bullshit is everywhere. Are the kids still in here? We'll deal with that later. Bullshit is everywhere. There is very little that you will encounter in life that has not been in some ways infused with bullshit. Not all of it bad. Your general day-to-day organic free-range bullshit is often necessary. Or at the very least innocuous. Oh, what a beautiful baby. I'm sure he'll grow into that head. That kind of bullshit in many ways provides important social contract
fertilizer. It keeps people from making each other cry all day. But then there's the more pernicious bullshit, your premeditated institutional bullshit designed to obscure and distract. Designed by whom? The bullshitocracy. It comes in three basic flavors. One, making bad things sound like good things.
Here's how I would approach that issue as a statistician or a political scientist, or no, as a psychologist, which I'm not, is how abstract you handle the race thing. In other words, you start out, and now y'all aren't quoting me. You start out in 1954 by saying nigger, nigger, nigger. By 1968, you can't say nigger. That hurts your backfire, so you say stuff like forced busing, states' rights, and all that stuff. And you're getting so abstract now, you're talking about cutting taxes and all of these things you're talking about are totally economic things, and the byproduct of them is blacks get hurt worse than whites. And subconsciously, maybe that is part of it. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that if it is getting that abstract and that coded, that we're doing away with the racial problem one way or the other. You follow me? Because obviously sitting around saying we want to cut taxes, we want to cut this, and we want is much more abstract than even the busing thing. And a hell of a lot more abstract than nigger, nigger, you know. So any way you look at it, race is coming on the back burner.
Organic, all natural cupcakes. Because factory-made sugar oatmeal balls doesn't sell. Patriot Act. Because are you scared enough to let me look at all your phone records, Act? Doesn't sell. So whenever something's been titled Freedom, Family, Fairness, Health, America, take a good long sniff. Chances are it's been manufactured in a facility that may contain traces of bullshit. Number two. The second way, hiding the bad things under mountains of bullshit. Complexity. You know, I would love to download Drizzy's latest Meek Mill diss. Everyone promised me that made sense. But I'm not really interested right now in reading Tolstoy's iTunes agreement. So I'll just click agree, even if it grants Apple prima nocte with my spouse. Here's another one. Simply put, banks shouldn't be able to bet your pension money on red. Bullshitly put, it's, hey, this. Dodd-Frank. Hey, a handful of billionaires can't buy our elections, right? Of course not. They can only pour unlimited anonymous cash into a 501c4 if 50% is devoted to issue education. Otherwise, they'd have to 501c6 it or funnel it openly through a non-campaign coordinating super PAC with a quarter. I think they're asleep now. We can sneak out. And finally, it's the bullshit of infinite possibility. These bullshitters cover their unwillingness to act under the guise of unending inquiry. We can't do anything because we don't yet know everything. We cannot take action on climate change until everyone in the world agrees gay marriage vaccines won't cause our children to marry goats who are going to come for our guns. Until then, I say teach the controversy. Now, the good news is this. Bullshitters have gotten pretty lazy, and their work is easily detected. And looking for it is kind of a pleasant way to pass the time. Like an eye spy of bullshit. So I say to you tonight, friends, the best defense against bullshit is vigilance. So if you smell something, say something.
Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who writes the laws.
It is ebb and flow, tidal gravity. It is ecological balance. You are an old man who thinks in terms of nations and peoples. There are no nations. There are no peoples. There are no Russians. There are no Arabs. There are no third worlds. There is no West. There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immane, interwoven, interacting, multivariate, multinational dominion of dollars. Petrol. petrodollars, electrodollars, multidollars, Reichmarks, rims, rubles, pounds, and shekels. It is the international system of currency which determines the totality of life on this planet. That is the natural order of things today. That is the atomic and subatomic and galactic structure of things today. There is no America. There is no democracy. There is only IBM and ITT and AT&T and DuPont, Dow, Union Carbide, and Exxon. Those are the nations of the world today. What do you think the Russians talk about in their councils of state? Karl Marx? They get out their linear programming charts, statistical decision theories, min-max solutions, and compute the price-cost probabilities of their transactions and investments just like we do. We no longer live in a world of nations and ideologies, Mr. Beale. The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime. And our children will live, Mr. Beale, to see that perfect world in which there's no war or famine, oppression or brutality. One vast and ecumenical holding company for whom all men will work to serve a common profit, in which all men will hold a share of stock. All necessities provided, all anxieties tranquilized, all boredom amused.
You know, whenever you're exposed to advertising in this country, you realize all over again that America's leading industry is still the manufacture, distribution, packaging, and marketing of bullshit. High-quality bullshit, world-class designer bullshit, to be sure. Hospital-tested, clinically proven bullshit, but bullshit nonetheless. And it always amuses me that so many people seem to think that bullshit only comes from certain sources. You know, advertising, politicians, salesmen. Not true. Bullshit is everywhere. Bullshit is rampant. Parents are full of shit. Teachers are full of shit, clergymen are full of shit, law enforcement people are full of shit. The entire country is completely full of shit. In fact, this country was founded by a group of slave owners who told us that all men are created equal. That is what's known as being stunningly, stunningly full of shit. And you know, I think... And I think people show their ignorance when they say they want politicians to be honest. What are these people talking about? If honesty were suddenly introduced into politics, it would throw everything off. The whole system would collapse. And I think deep down the American people know that. The American people like their bullshit out front, where they can get a good strong whiff of it. That's why they reelected Clinton. Listen. Clinton might be full of shit, but he lets you know it. Dole tried to hide it. I'm an honest man. Bullshit. Bullshit. People don't believe that shit. Clinton said, "Hi, I'm full of shit, and how do you like that?" And the people said, "At least he's honest. At least he's honest about being full of shit." It's like the business world. All businessmen are completely full of shit. Just the worst kind of people you could ever want to run into. Businessmen. And the proof of it is, they don't even trust each other. They don't trust each other. When a businessman is negotiating a deal, the first thing he does is to automatically assume that the other guy is a complete lying prick who's trying to fuck him on the deal. So he has to do everything he can to fuck the other guy a little bit harder and a little bit faster. And then, when it comes to dealing with customers, that's when you get the big smile. That's when you get the big smile. Businessman always has that big smile on his face as he carefully positions himself directly behind the customer and unzips his pants and services the account. We specialize in customer service. You heard that? Now you know what it means. Whoever coined the phrase, let the buyer beware, was probably bleeding from the asshole. Then you have advertising. Advertising is the businessman's cheaply dressed $2 blowjob. Advertising sells you things you don't need and can't afford that are overpriced and don't work. And they do it by exploiting your fears and insecurities. And if you don't have any, they'll be glad to give you a few by showing you a nice picture of a woman with big tits. That's the essence of advertising. Big tits. Threateningly big tits. And speaking of big tits, what about show business? Show business, completely dishonest, corrupt, and full of shit, but in a nice way. Plenty of expensive drugs and perverted sex. If you're going to be full of shit, might as well enjoy your work. Then you have the media. Not just the news media, let's include them all. The media are almost literally exploding with bullshit. Because they're located right at the crossroads of all the other bullshit. The media are made up of equal parts advertising, politics, business, public relations, and show business. These people are sitting right at Bullshit Junction. There's enough bullshit in the media for Texas to open a branch office. And you still have enough left over to start 2 law firms and a Christian bookstore. Because, folks, I gotta tell you, when it comes to bullshit, truly major league bullshit, you have to stand back in awe of the all-time heavyweight champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. Organized religion. It's no contest. Religion easily has the best bullshit story of all time. Think about it. Religion has convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a list of 10 specific things he doesn't want you to do. And if you do any of these things, he will send you to a special place of burning and fire and smoke and torture and anguish for you to live forever and suffer and burn and scream until the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all powerful, all present, all knowing and all wise. Just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions and billions of dollars. They pay no taxes, and somehow they always need money. You talk about a good bullshit story. If I may be permitted a small pun, holy shit. Holy shit.